We're actually recording this, so we didn't need all this. This is all introduction anyway. David, living here in Ziklag, was telling the king, King Achish, oh yeah, I've been going into Judah territory, and I've been killing off a bunch of people that are Israelites. And of course, Philistines and Israelites being arch enemies, the Philistine king was quite happy about that arrangement. But what we come to find out is David was actually raiding down in this area, further south from the kingdom, and he's raiding all of these areas down here. And in doing that, he's essentially attacking the allies of the Philistines, because the Philistines need the allies from the south to be able to take over the Israelite territory. So David has set himself up. He's hiding from Saul. He doesn't want to tick off the Israelites, right? Because what happens if he actually starts raiding the Israelites? They will reject him as king. And so that wouldn't be good, because he's been told, you're going to be king. So he can't attack the very country that he is going to become king over. That would be a little bit bad. But he doesn't want to turn against the Philistines, because what happens if he turns against the Philistines? They're going to kick him out, and then David's going to be out on the run again. So David is in a quandary. So he is, and so that's why, I'll go back to verse 12. Verse 10 is him telling the king, oh yeah, I've been attacking so and so and so and so. But David is just lying. David's just a bold-faced liar. I am taking this material from the standpoint that David is not perfect. That's a pretty big shock, isn't it? Because I read some commentators. The majority of commentators out there are pro-David. They love David. David can't do no wrong. When he poops, it don't stink. That's how good David is. So they're saying, oh yeah, David is hoodwinking the enemy, and what a great thing. Sure, he's lying, and he's living a double life, and he's a total scoundrel in my opinion. But some people are like, oh, David is so smart, he's using his intelligence to be able to hide out and lie to the king, but in doing that, he's also lying to other people. I don't take that tack. So I'm giving you my slant on this, because I think that David has some problems. So verse 12, Achish trusted David and said to himself, he has become so odious, meaning he stinks, to his people, the Israelites, that he will be my servant forever. And keep going. Remember, no chapter breaks back in those days. And so it would go on. In those days, the Philistines gathered their forces to fight against Israel. Achish said to David, you must understand that you and your men will accompany me in the army. Isn't that great? David said, then you will see for yourself what your servant can do. Achish replied, very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life. When you're on such good terms with the enemy that the enemy trusts you with his life, I don't know if that's a good idea. I just don't. Some people are like, this is really smart strategically. He is a very shrewd man. I just think he's a liar. I just don't think David's perfect. Now again, so you can disagree with me. You could be thinking to yourself, you know what? David's a smart cookie. He really is doing all the right things and saying all the right things and acting appropriately. I personally don't think so. So that's where David and Achish are at. Now the problem is, flip forward now to verse 29. The Philistines, I'll let you get there. 1 Samuel 29. We're there now. Yay. 1 Samuel 29 verse 1. The Philistines gathered all their forces at Aphek, and Israel camped by the spring in Jezreel. As the Philistine rulers marched with their units of hundreds and thousands, David and his men were marching at the rear with Achish. Now, I really want you to appreciate what is happening at this moment. David is the king's bodyguard. Do you think the king is marching in the front or the rear? Rear, and that's smart militarily, the safest place. You'd have to get through the entire army to get to Achish. So David is there in the back. Now, you got to imagine, what is he thinking? David is now marching with King Achish to attack the Israelites, and he's walking along with them. I don't know. All I could be thinking of at that point is, I am in deep trouble. I have no idea how I'm going to get out of this. And I am now in an impossible situation. Now, I will be honest. again, the commentators that think that David walks on water and is absolutely perfect are saying that David is really, really smart, because the whole master plan that David has is that when the time comes and the Philistines go into battle, him being in the rear will turn on the Philistines, and the Philistines will have to fight a two-front battle, which will cause the Philistines to essentially lose. David becomes the hero. The problem is, there's nothing in the text that tells us that that's what David is thinking. All I can gather from the text is David is just being swept along in his circumstances, and he's in trouble. Because sooner or later, the lie has to get exposed. And that's always a sad thing for us, right? We love when we can throw out a lie and keep the lie perpetuated as long as we remember. I mean, especially if you get a couple lies going out there, you got to remember which lie I'm telling and who I'm doing. But there comes a point, and I'm not kidding, that this happens so often, it's ridiculous. There comes a point when the lie finally crumbles, when the lie is exposed for what it is. And you know what typically happens? How do you feel once the lie is finally out there in the open and you talk about it? You feel relieved. How do you feel the 30 seconds before the lie is to be revealed? You're freaking out. You're geeking out. You're not too sure what to do. I am in so much trouble. And you think to yourself, this couldn't be any worse. And again, this could be in other circumstances as well. Financial difficulties. Financial difficulties come and everything is crumbling and falling around you. And yet then sometimes things happen and you get relieved from that. But it's all that time in it where your stomach muscles are churning. You're not too sure what to do. You're not too sure how long to keep the lie going. Or you're not too sure how you're going to survive yourself. And then ultimately something happens. That's where David's at right now. You've got to appreciate, I think, that David is freaking out. He's not too sure what to do. And I also believe that David is so sucked into his circumstances, he can't think clearly. Has that ever happened to you? You get so wrapped up in all of your problems, all of the issues, whatever is happening, that you cannot stand back and objectively think straight. That's what I think is happening to David. Yeah, and I'm going to bring up, because I'm going to save the concept of the fact that this isn't just David we're talking about. David is also responsible for 600 men following him. So in one respect, that is true. But you could imagine, if I was able to gather 600 people, and there's the army before me, I could probably mow down a whole lot from the behind before anyone figures out what's going on. So the sneak attack is 600, probably you can multiply it. But I want you to keep that in the back of your head. Yeah, and that's a total, no, that's chapter 30, that's next week. So this is one of those things where everyone often makes choices that end up having horrible negative consequences. And here's a question for you as well. Will God always rescue you from the consequences of your sin? Will God always make you feel the full consequences of your sin? Right, that's the trap. That's the trap that some people get caught in. They end up in a bad situation, and they say to themselves, Lord, please save me. And I don't have percentages, you know, as well, you know, 75% of the time. I have none of that. It all depends upon what's happening. There are going to be times that God is going to come in and allow you to not feel the consequences of your sin. Greatest example of that, Jesus Christ hanging on the cross. Is anyone here going to feel or receive what they deserve from their sinful life in eternity? No. You and I have been given mercy, and I think there's an interesting distinction, and I do thank VeggieTales for this distinction. I don't know how much I can push this distinction, but I think this distinction helps. Because some people ask, what's the difference between grace and mercy? Because you'll hear me say that a lot, you know. And even Paul says that grace and mercy and peace to you from God our Father, from our Lord. Grace and mercy. Grace. Is there a difference between grace and mercy? And according to VeggieTales, Jonah, there is. And I kind of like the distinction, personally. Grace is receiving something you did not deserve. So that's, if I give David $100, he didn't deserve it, but he received it. Mercy is not receiving something you do deserve in a negative connotation. Okay? So, you lie, cheat, and steal, and you deserve to go to jail, but a judge has mercy and says those consequences will not be attached to you. So, I'm operating on that distinction. I don't know if I can linguistically support that or not, but I kind of like the distinction nonetheless. David is about to experience mercy. You and I have been given both grace and mercy in the cross. Mercy in the fact that you and I all deserve to be damned in hell forever. We deserve eternal punishment because we fell short of God's requirement of perfection, so none of us deserve to go to heaven. We deserve to go to hell. And that's why you see both grace and mercy in action. We get mercy because we deserve to go to hell, but we're not given that. And yet we're also given grace because we're given heaven and we don't deserve that. Do you see the distinction in there? Both sides of the same coin. And that's the reason why it's an important distinction for us, because there are going to be times when you will suffer horrible consequences because of your sin, because of things that you've done. I think we've all been caught in lies, and once those lies get exposed, sometimes we might feel the full brunt of the pain that we've caused. This happens a lot when people confess infidelity, when people confess gambling addictions. Sooner or later, there's a painful price that's to be paid. But there are other times, for God's own omnipotent reasons, that he says, I will not allow you to feel the consequences. I'll give you a prime example from my own life. When I was a kid, I was not perfect. I would like to think I was, but I wasn't. And there was a certain time in my life when I believed that stealing was okay. Because I told, you know, and I had all the excuses that everyone else had. And they still to this day, which is, oh, it's big business. They've got lots of money. They're ripping us off because the prices are so high. And it was really interesting the way it happened, because I used to be into model rockets. It was a short face. And they used to sell these things called solar igniters. And these little solar igniters were expensive. And I'm like, do not tell me that it costs that much money to make a solar igniter. So I had a friend whose mom worked for Ben Franklin. Do you all remember Ben? You do remember that? Anyone too young is going, isn't he like a guy flying a kite or something? Ben Franklin was a store, and we would call it a five and dime store. It was assorted, I guess like a CVS or something like that, a Save-On, kind of like that. And my friend had a key to get into the Ben Franklin. So there would be times that me and a couple other buddies would sneak into Ben Franklin. There's one time we actually had a birthday party through the middle of the night. We actually hauled in a TV and a VCR and watched movies inside. Yeah, I guess I was bored. I didn't know what to do. But I would steal this stuff. Now, I think to myself, what was that? Oh, sorry, burglary as opposed to steal. It's not just stealing. It's burglary. There's 100 things. And I think to myself, what would have happened if I would have gotten caught? Would my life be a little bit different than it is now? And I think to myself, God had tremendous mercy on my soul because he had me shielded from the consequences of my sin. I think God was kind because I learned from it. I eventually discovered objectively going, I think what I'm doing is wrong. It was probably a youth group lesson, and I finally figured it out, and I did make restitution. I would go into the store and buy stuff, and like give extra money. Like, here you go, just take extra money. They're like, why? Like, I just take it. And then I'd run out and they probably thought I was some weirdo or something. But I was thankful that I learned a lesson from that. That's mercy where God shielded me from that. Am I going to get in trouble now that I confess that on audio? Am I going to go to jail? Is there a statute of limitations on this?
7 years.
7? Oh, that was a long, okay, so I'm good. Whew. Well, though it was only last year that I did. No, wait, no, I was a lot younger. That's mercy. And I think we've all experienced it. Let's see what happens here now with David. Be thinking again in your own mind, have there been times that you got into such a jam and God shielded you from the consequences? Because it may or may not be true. Because I think, well, I'm going to say it, because there's other times that God does not shield us from the consequences, and we feel the full wrath of our decisions. If God shows us mercy and doesn't allow us to feel the consequences of our sin, does that mean He loves us more than if He allows us to feel the consequences of our sin? That's a very mature thing to say. It's hard when you're going through it. Because some people will say, gosh, I'm still feeling the consequences of my sin. Maybe I didn't do something right. Maybe God doesn't love me. And then when we feel mercy, we sometimes take it to an extreme going, oh, wow, God saved me from that. He must really think I'm great. I can pretty much go out and do anything I want because God is shielding me from the consequences of my actions. See how dangerous that gets? Yes, Justin. That's okay. It happens to me all the time. I just talk and then something good comes out. So, I hope. Nah.
But like how we go from thinking like there's like we can do anything to
That's okay. We'll keep moving. All right. So David's in his pickle. What do you think we're gonna experience here? Verse 3. The commanders of the Philistines asked, what about these Hebrews? Achish replied, is this not David, who was an officer of King Saul of Israel? He has been with me for over a year. Ruby in your crown. Good job. And from the day he left Saul until now, I have found no fault in him. That gets when your lies are so complete that someone looks at you and can find no fault in you, that's a lot of lies, I would have to admit. And again, of course, if Achish was told the truth, oh yeah, David actually hasn't been raiding the Judah towns like he says, he's actually been raiding Philistine towns and Philistine ally towns, he would think a whole lot differently. But that's how well David has sold this lie. But the Philistine commanders were angry with him and said, send the man back that he may return to the place you assigned him. He must not go with us into battle or he will turn against us during the fighting like we talked about. How better could he regain his master's favor than by taking the heads of our own men? Isn't this the David they sang about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. So Achish called David and said to him, as surely as the Lord lives, you have been reliable, and I would be pleased to have you serve with me in the army. From the day you came to me until now, I have found no fault in you, but the rulers don't approve of you. Turn back and go in peace. Do nothing to displease the Philistine rulers. Now, if you're David, what would you do at that moment in time? Like, oh, okay. Shucks and darn it. Okay, I guess I'll leave now. And I would probably be running at that point going, I just dodged a bullet. I can't believe that I... Because at that point, there was no out. David was walking down the path, and there was no, he was stuck in his predicament. There was no way out. I will make a distinction, too, because this is where often a lot of pastors would take a detour into 1 Corinthians 10, and they quote the passage that God will not tempt you beyond what you can bear, but if he does, then he'll provide a way of escape for you. The only problem is that is in reference to temptation, not to you making really stupid choices in your life. That's a big difference, I think, don't you? I think that's a huge difference. And this is a man-made problem. David, at any time, could have come clean and done what was right or spoken truth. And granted, things would be different for his life. But at any time, he could have done that. Yes, Alex. Yeah, you know, the only problem is just how, you know, the other reason why I think this might be it, and again, I could be wrong because there are plenty of people, and so I've given you my slant, but there is the other slant that maybe David had this whole thing master planned. The other thing that I find conspicuously absent in this whole chapter is God. Now get us to next chapter when we talk about Ziklag and him returning back. The next thing you know, David is consulting God all over the place. But we hear nothing of him consulting God during this time. So it very well could be because also David, let's check out David's response and you'll hear what he says. He says, but what have I done? Asked David. What have you found against your servant from the day I came to you until now? Why can't I go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? Which is just vague and ambiguous enough that a lot of people say, yeah, what he was essentially saying is my lord and my king was Saul or God, and I wanted to fight against their enemies, i.e. the Philistines. Obviously, Achish took it as you wanted to fight with me and fight against the Israelites. Oh, I don't think he's, and I don't think that anyone that says that, that he's doing this for noble reasons would say he's perfect either. But it's just so odd that there's no mention of God, and you listen to what he's done, and he's based his life for a full year is now based on a lie. That's, I guess, the problem I have. He's living with the enemy, and he's doing it not for any noble purposes except to run away from Saul because he really thinks, because at that point he's abandoned the promise of God. The promise of God was, you're going to be king. And he believed at that point when he left that Saul was going to succeed in killing him. So he abandoned that promise. So I guess that's where I look at this. I think I see David more as, I am totally in trouble and now I don't know what to do. And that's another thing, and I'm going to talk about leading the men because that's going to be, that's an interesting side note which ties in beautifully what I think for Father's Day. Yeah, when we get in a corner, when we get in a pickle, when we get in a jam, we often do things or say things or act in ways that we should not do it. And this is where I see David protesting just a wee bit too much because, like I said, for all of us, we might have gone, I'm out of here. But David is so, I believe, sucked into his problem that he cannot think objectively. And he needs truly a way out. Well, but again, David Achish thinks that David is like Mr. He's going to call him an angel from heaven. Isn't that, I mean, that's pretty amazing. So, yes, theoretically, that may be why he's protesting, but wow. So all of you believe this is all David's master plan. That's awesome. All right. That's cool. Yeah. 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 Maybe Achish would be like, wow, he did bolt a little too quickly. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. I'm scared that he's putting his entire men at risk for going into a battle that he can't fight. Yeah, and like I said, that is... Yeah, from behind especially, yes, they would turn into like 1,200, 1,300 men because you're getting them from behind. Mike. Yes. Wait. Good question. Yeah, well, that's a good question because I've taken it from the standpoint that if he was, this is the difference. So let's say your teenage daughter comes to you and says, Dad, I want to go to this party where there's lots of drinking and lots of other things going on. And can I go to this party? Yeah, Garrett's like, no. But you say to yourself, but Dad, I've got all these friends there and none of them know Jesus Christ. Have you tried this? Yeah, did it work? No. Okay. We'll have them over at our house. Yeah. And you're like, I want to go into evil, essentially, and in hopes to convert some of them. Witness dating. Yeah, I love that when that happens. A friend of ours did that in college, and we're like, whatever, you think she's hot. That's why you're dating her. You're not hoping to convert her. Yeah. Witness dating. Yeah. But that's the reason why, to answer the question, Mike, that's why I kind of get a little nervous on this. If you guys came to me and said, you know what, I want to become a Mormon so that I'm going to act like a full blown Mormon. Let's go even more evil. Let's do a cultist, a witch. You're going to become a Wiccan. Okay. You're going to join the Wiccan coven. And you're telling me, Mark, I just want you to trust me because I'm going to infiltrate their ranks. I'm going undercover. I am the undercover witch. Yeah. And when I get there, I will be able to find out their secrets. And in doing that, I will then be able to convert them from the inside and we can have like a sneak attack because I'm like already on the inside. Now, even that, at least there sounds like some sort of justification. But what happens if you came to me and said, you know what, my whole life is just falling apart and I don't think God's promises are for me anymore. So I think I'm going to go and become a Wiccan and hope that maybe later on God will change things. That's kind of how the analogy I see it. I guess I'll get to you, Lynn. Just hold on. I'll get to you. I'm preaching here, people. But that's kind of what I see it as, because I tried to think, everyone tries to justify David's action saying he is doing the sneak attack on the devil, so to speak. But I would get a little nervous as a dad or as anyone allowing someone else to enter, because this goes back to, what about those 600 men? It's not just David, it's everyone. Lynn, what do you have? You're going to defend David?
I understand David. That
man, we're just letting it all hang out. Anyone else want to confess their sins? Don't do that. Which is weird, but isn't that kind of opposite David? Because David ran to Ziklag, not because he believed he was invincible, but because he was fearing for his life and believed that the promise of God had actually failed. That's what kind of bugs me. If he would have said, hey guys, Israelites, hey King Saul, guess what? I'm going to get those Philistines and watch this. You know what? Let's act like we're having a fight and we're going to set it up so that you guys, we're going to be able to come in from the rear, but you've got to trust me and make sure that everything will be fine. At that point, I'd be like, dude, I think you are playing with fire and I think you are in dangerous ground and territory. But that's not what's happening here with David. He ran from God for a specific purpose. He specifically said, you know what? Saul's going to win this battle. I will die. And because I will die, I need to leave. I need to take matters into my own hands and protect my own life, which is kind of opposite of what you're saying, which is, you know what? God promised that I was going to be a teacher, so I'm going to go out and do whatever I want because I can do it. So, I don't know. But this is a good discussion. At least that's what I think.
God wanted him to kill Saul later on. And he said, no, I'm not going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
He basically said, I'm not going to do what he's been told to do.
Yeah.
And he's got no out but to go and do something else.
Yeah. And that's where I think we find David. David is just in a predicament. Okay, Alex, what do you have for me?
All right, so... you don't have to worry about the fact that he's doing
Yes. Yeah, a bunch of priests died, right? Yeah. Yeah, and we haven't even said again next week, chapter 30, if we get there. Yeah, there's going to be some consequences to his choices. Yeah.
That's why I think he's thinking Machiavellian, but I don't think God is rewarding him. In other words, you know, he didn't succeed in, at least in my mind, he didn't succeed in going to wife.
Yeah, I guess it's if you could take it from the standpoint that David truly did have the purpose of fighting for the Israelites. The problem is, the text doesn't say it. It's just nowhere in the text. And again, the fact that God is conspicuously absent, and it's only till next week that we find him repenting because he's starting to feel some of the pressures on him, that's when all of a sudden now God is being consulted all over the place. Which again, I don't know about you, but that happens to me all the time. I get so sucked into my own thing, and either I think I'm invincible, or I'm thinking that everything is falling apart. Why is it that when everything starts falling apart, I think the last thing that comes to my brain is to pray? Can someone explain that to me? Why is it that when things are terrible, I don't just go, you know what, I think I'll just pray? Now, there have been glimmering, shining moments of my life when I have actually done that. But for the most part, I don't do that. And I think that's where we see David. David, I think, is just caught. And he's not too sure what he's going to do. Because it very well could happen if he enters into battle and fighting from the rear, maybe he thinks he's going to win, but there's been no guarantee on that. And in fact, if he would have heard the prophecy from Samuel, the very prophecy that was happening that night was that the Israelites were going to lose the battle. That's pretty weird. Yes, Justin. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't think God asks us to... So that goes back to Mike. I don't know. Does someone have anything else that says maybe it's okay to... Can you lie to the devil anyway? I mean, he's the father of... Can you lie to the liar? I guess you probably could. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Your character is way off. In my opinion, I think David's character is way off. And again, he's not consulting God. Right. Yeah. I mean, this is one of those things. That's the reason why I love the Bible, is because if you think it's neat and clean and here's all the answers to your life and no, this is hard. And if anyone says living a Christian life is easy, they are lying. There they just haven't really struggled with. Yeah, that's a great question. Anne Frank, lying to the Nazis so that she could save the... We're in sticky... Yeah, Schindler's List. Exactly. Yeah.
The Philistines must have had spies in Israel, and they had allies in the southern part of Israel. When David came and said, oh, I raided the Israeli camps and everything, wouldn't they have known...
He killed everyone. That was what, that was his MO was, when I go and attack the town, I'm going to kill everyone in the town. That way, there's no survivors. Kind of like, you know, Captain Jack Sparrow, he leaves no survivors. And then they go, well, where'd all the stories come from? Because all the survivors are gone. Yeah, that's what he would do. He would ensure silence by, I'm going to kill everyone and then leave. And no one's going to know that it was me. And that's... Yeah, well, again, I don't know if that, but the funny thing about this is, who is the one figuring it out? It's not Achish. It's all the Philistine commanders. They're like, we don't like this guy marching behind us. So they already know the truth. Yeah. Yeah, Achish was like, and God, he's going to call him an angel. Yeah, but that's the thing. He's so lied to the liar that... Yeah, I think it's because David sold the lie to Achish the most.
I also think Achish could have been, there's all kinds of different rulers. Some foolish,
Some are trusting. Yeah, I see Achish as a trusting. Yeah. Ruthless. Yeah. Justin. Yes, I would say that your yoke is easy, but I say living a Christian life is not simple. It is not neat and clean. Oh, we got to get moving on here. All right, Joe, last comment. Sure, you're going to be in territory.
You're going to be asking me, are you Christian?
Yeah.
I'm going to want to say yes because that's telling the truth, but I
can't. Yeah. This is odd. But I think that, Corwin, I really appreciate the point of the fact that David's character is truly in questionable territory. I don't like what's going on here. And you know the other thing I don't like about it is, again, it's not just him. I often don't mind if I lie and I'm the only one that feels the consequences of my sin. But what happens when I lie and my lie affects a whole lot of other people? Exactly. And that will be a perfect example of David messing up and God coming to him through the prophet and saying, you are forgiven, but your kid's dead. That's a prime example of God saying, you're forgiven. You will not feel an eternal consequence, but you will feel an earthly consequence. And of course, again, even this point, David is still going to feel an earthly consequence because he left Ziklag. And who's back in Ziklag? All the women and the children. And so something bad happens there. So we're going to move on. We only got a couple more verses. We're going to make it through. Where are we at? Oh, 9, yes, because David's protesting. Again, I think I could have found a way to go, all right, king, no big whoop dog, I'm just going to head on back and leave. But David's like, no, I want to go. Oh, come on. Listen to what Achish says. Achish answered, I know that you have been as pleasing in my eyes as an angel of God. When people caught in evil start thinking that you're great with them. I don't know. It's my opinion. Yes. What was that? He's there? Oh, Drug Enforcement Agency. Sorry. Oh, yes, you're going. He is so deep undercover, he can't blow his cover. Maybe? I'm such a good drug dealer that the drug lord loves me. This would be an interesting Bible study to do with the DEA. That would be fascinating. Here's how you do it. And then he's hoping to get the takedown from behind. All right. So he's an angel of God. Nevertheless, the Philistine commanders have said he must not go up with us into battle. Now get up early along with your master's servants who have come with you and leave in the morning as soon as it is light. So David and his men got up early in the morning to go back to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. And that's when the battle takes place. And this is where, again, I want to point out the fact that one of the difficulties that I really had with the chapter was the fact that it wasn't just David. It was David and 600 other men. And I think that especially today on Father's Day, I would like to encourage all past, present, and future fathers that one of the things that we are given responsibility is for our kids. And I think that sometimes we as dads forget that. Women, you guys are intelligent. Us guys are just stupid sometimes. And we often forget. Yeah, sometimes. We often forget that people are watching us. So guys, I want to end this with the video that I found. It was a Father's Day thing, but it was amazing how it tied in specifically what to encourage you today, not just to live your life, but live your life in a way knowing that other people are watching what you're doing. Let's watch the video. Thank you. It's a reminder watching that to know that I've got three kids watching everything that I do, and maybe it's a good time to stop and go, you know, what path am I walking? What am I doing? And not just looking at overall stuff, but even looking at the little stuff, the things I say and the things I do. Do my kids see that and know God's love? Do I treat them with grace and with mercy a lot like God has done with me? And most importantly, do I want them to know who God is in what I say and do? Lord, I pray for us. I know that many of us make choices on a daily basis. And for some of us, maybe those choices have no effect except for ourselves. Or maybe those choices affect a lot of people. Because people are watching, whether they're coworkers or neighbors or possibly even our own children. And I pray that we would stop and take a look that, first and foremost, how much are you a part of my life? Do my kids see you in everything that I do? Do my kids see me doing the right things? And in hopes, Lord, they would want to follow in those footsteps. And I pray that we would all this day take that responsibility, but most importantly, Lord, for us fathers, that we would make it a point to have our kids see what the right thing is. And Lord, they may not see perfection in us, but they would know who you are, and they would know your love and mercy. So I thank you for this study. I thank you for this debate, for stretching our minds, causing us to think, but most importantly, falling back to the cross, thankful that you got us out of the biggest jam we could ever be in, that we were lost, that we were hopeless, that we were filled with sin, that we were blind and confused. But you got us out. And for that, we are eternally grateful. Thank you for your mercy and your grace. In Jesus' name, amen.